I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the Quick and the Dirty podcast, we have such an incredible guest coming up, the amazing Buck Angel. He's known as Trampa to some. He's a trans activist. He's a sex educator. He's a motivational speaker. He's also a porn star on the side.
You know, just a little thing. You know, just something a couple of things you can't leave out.
This was an incredible Zoom call that we had with him. So you're going to notice that the quality of the audio is different. But honestly, this is one of my favorite conversations anyway.
So fun. We talk everything from sex toys to porn to helping people out.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
Hillary.
Yes, Sandra.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, 3 years together. How is that a thing?
I know. I looked at the calendar and I realized that we're celebrating the third anniversary of the Quick and the Dirty Podcast. So we cannot do an episode without marking this momentous occasion. Happy anniversary, Hillary. I can't think of anyone I'd rather be doing this dirty little podcast with.
Quite frankly, I can't think of anyone I could be having these conversations with other than you. Did you know that the traditional gift for a third anniversary is leather?
Oh my. So that means we should be gifting each other something leather?
What do you want?
I want chaps, obviously.
Assless?
Aren't all chaps assless?
I don't know. I guess they're just pants if they're not.
Exactly. I want the assless kind, of course. What about you? What do you want?
Maybe something a little whippy.
Something that leaves a mark, perhaps.
What a crazy conversation. Happy third anniversary. I adore you.
I adore you too. And I have to say, we were great friends before we started the podcast, but this podcast has brought our friendship to a whole new level and it's brought us closer. And I love you so much, Hillary. I do. I even love drunk Hillary. She's the best.
She doesn't have much to say, but she's all right.
Buck Angel, let me introduce your life. Can I?
Sure, my
Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready. I'm scared. I'm actually scared.
I like that you are a porn actor because, oh, we're going to get into that. And by the way, I got into that with my son yesterday. He schooled me on Buck Angel. You are a sex educator and you're a motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. And those are some pretty awesome titles. You also happen to have been born female. And we're going to talk about that as well. So we invite you, and we're so excited to have you on this podcast because you are one of our very special guests as part of Pride Month. And I can't think of anyone better to invite on the podcast than the one, the only, Buck Angel.
Right on. Yay. Now we're going to see what your listeners think about me and my big mouth. I have a big mouth.
Oh, they're going to love you. Oh, they've been dealing with our big mouths for years.
That's why we connected. Right on.
That's right. Finally, they can deal with someone else's shit besides their own. This is good. Okay, so I asked you before we started, but I'm going to ask you again on the record, pronouns. What are your pronouns? And what? How do you feel about pronouns?
Yeah,
and I'll
good
sit
question.
Back with this. Yes.
Ready, everyone. Get sit down and get your coffee because I'm about to go off. No, here's the deal. I understand it. It's a new world today. So for me, my pronouns are he and him. I had what we like to call back in the day a sex change, and I had a sex change from a woman to a man to look like a man, to be a man, to walk the world as a man. So fast forward today, now we have to ask everybody their pronouns. It's actually kind of insulting to a person like myself and other people who literally change their gender in order to live that life in that gender. So I don't feel like I always have to announce my pronouns, because if you can't tell I'm a man, then my sex change didn't work. And that's the part that is very important for people to understand. I personally don't think we should all have to announce our pronouns. I think it's important for some people, and I think it's on some level sort of forcing us into this space that some of us don't feel like it's necessary for us to do. So how do we find that middle ground? So with that, I'm a he, I'm a him, I'm a man. So
yes, in case you are wondering, I'm a she and I'm a her.
Right on. Okay.
Can I tell you why I asked? Buck, I just want to put this out there, and this is why I asked. Many years ago, when my son was 12 years old, he came out as transgender. And at the time, my husband and I went to a parent support group of other parents whose children had come out as transgender so we could talk about it and learn. And the very first thing we did when we went around the room is we all had to announce our pronouns. Right. And I got to thinking that was what you did in that community. So I've asked people that question, and you know what they've said to me? Thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you would never ask me. Why That's am I right. asking you? And it has always made me wildly uncomfortable. So I'm kind of glad you said that.
There you go, my friend. But it takes a person like me to be able to say it, because it's in my community. It's not in your community. But what the problem for me is, my community is forcing other people to use their own, language with discounting, completely discounting what other people feel about it. That's fascist. You can't expect everybody to believe and think. I don't expect everybody to understand my sex change. No way will they. I don't care. People call me she all the time. I don't care. The thing that's the most important is, how do I feel about myself? And this is really a thing that I try to teach the younger kids, is that people are always going to misgender you for the rest of your life as a trans person. They will. They misgender me. Look at me. So that said, it is a weaponized tool that people have used against us. And so for me, it's like when we're playing into that game, well, I'm a she and I'm a he. No, if we just let it go and people misgender us, then we say, excuse me, sir, actually I'm a man or a woman. And it's a way that we can actually educate, I think. So I do understand that side of the younger generation feeling very uncomfortable being misgendered, but I got misgendered my whole life, and look at me today. So on some level, it really helped me become a stronger person when you have to confront these things to the world. And that's how I became an educator. It was like to say, hey, no, I'm actually a guy who used to be a lady, and I still have a vagina, and I have layers on and layers. And so that said, we have to meet in the middle. I don't think it's fair one way or the other. I think some people don't want to announce their pronouns and some do, but we need to understand that some people don't.
One of the things I love most about your role as an educator is you not only share your own story and your own journey, but you've gone out of your way to help other people share their stories. Why do you think that that's so important for the trans community and the world as a whole?
Right on. Thank you for that. So because I'm an elder, I'm 58 years old, and I transitioned 25 years ago. I'm one of the oldest trans people out there. That said, my transition was so difficult. I transitioned in the 90s, right? And I transitioned when there was no medication, when there was no doctors, when there was no surgery, when there was no internet. Can you imagine, you guys? No internet.
What? Getting information must have been.
I know.
Oh, you're broken. That's right.
So you can Google sex change or transition. You can't do that when I did it. So my point being is, now I'm a trampa. They call me trampa. So I am really here to help the kids go to a space that I didn't have to suffer. I had to suffer so much. They don't have to suffer today, because I can help them by giving them information that they don't have to deal with certain things. They could just leap right over it. So that, for me, it's giving back to a space that I have been gifted, which is to become a man. And I feel like it's so important to always understand your space and always be humble around it.
I already knew you were a trampa, because my son Olson already told me. I know more about you than Google could have told me. And by the way, I came, he's like, say hi to trampa for me. I'm like, okay. he texted all of his friends to say, my mom's talking to Buck Angel tomorrow. So you're kind of a big deal with all of his friends. Can I ask you a question about transgender versus transsexual? Because we have learned a lot about transgender in the last few years, and I think the world has been educated, especially in mainstream media, which has been great. But I don't think the word transsexual has been used, and I don't know that people know what the difference is. So can you just clarify what that means?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So again, I'm an older generation of a trans person. When I transitioned, we called it transsexual. And most all of us transitioned to become the other gender. So that's why I call it a sex change. On some level, I transitioned to be binary. I did not transition to be a they, them, those, or non-binary. Well, everything that's happening today, I literally had a sex change so that I can live this life as a man. To me, so what happened moving forward is transgender happened, and transgender became an umbrella term for all these different variations of gender, which is amazing and beautiful. So some kids aren't even doing any hormones, no surgery, but they're saying they're trans. And that's all awesome and great. But the one problem I had was that they actually took out the word and the label of transsexual, calling it derogatory, calling it antiquated. And I'm like, but wait a minute, that's actually my identity. I'm an actual transsexual. So I started to see this trend with the younger generation of trying to eliminate my specific space, which is a medical space. I live in a medical space. I have gender dysphoria. I needed medical intervention. I needed surgery, hormones in order to live my life fully as a man. That is a medical condition. Today, transgender is an umbrella term for everything from a medical condition, but most people are going towards the non-medical transition, and that's called self-ID. I'm not self-ID'd. I had to go to a doctor. I had to go to a psychiatrist. I had to do a whole level of stuff to get to the space. Now, I'm going to sound like an old trampa right now, for sure. And I'm going to say, I disagree with a lot of the things that happen in the newer world today. It's too easy, accessible for people to transition medically. And that scares me, because when a child removes a part of their body, whether it be their breasts or maybe have a surgery, and then 5 years later decide that's the wrong thing, that's called detransitioning. And that's happening at a faster rate today, because we do not have what we used to have, which is sort of like an overseer of the situation, which my community likes to call gatekeepers. And I like to call actual logical insanity, because if I didn't have those doctors and that thing, and I did what I did, and I decided it was the wrong deal, look at me. What am I going to do? I'm never going to go back to looking like you. I'm always going to look like me. And that's detrimental to mental health, though, a lot. So the difference is that I'm a transsexual, which means I have a medical condition, and I had to actually use medicine, get surgery, and to live fully as a male in a binary space, where transgender is now an umbrella term.
Can I ask you about the transgender community as a whole? Because now that you've talked about the elders, and I love that you think you're an elder, but you look too young to be an elder, but okay. And then you talk about the younger generation. Yep. Is there a lot of infighting in the community? Because if you go on Twitter, the answer is yes. And I have a friend who's an author, and she has written a beautiful book, and she has been vilified in the community. There's a lot of people who just eat each other, and so what's going on?
Oh God, where do we start? Number one, what's going on is the internet. So what we have is a place where people can spew their bullshit without ever being confronted. Remember, I'm an old school kind of guy where we actually had to look at each other. And if I called you a bitch or you call me an asshole, we could actually deal with it right now and probably walk away going, okay, I hate you, or actually, okay. Now you can't do that, because you have this false sense of reality, and it gives people power to say, fuck you, Buck Angel, you don't know what you're talking about, without having any recourse to that. So what's happened is now there's infighting in the trans community, because what is trans? And they made up names like, I'm considered a trans medicalist, I think, which is saying that I believe in medical transitioning as different than self-ID. And there's layers upon layers. And so what's happening is that we've become a fascist a community on some level. If you do not speak the language of transgender, if you do not go into the slot of transgender, then you are transphobic. I've been called transphobic, which is strange to me.
Isn't the whole point to be able to be who you are in a space that is good for you on a mental and physical level?
You would think so, my friend. And I would not be here today, 25 plus years of transition, turning 58. I would not be where I am today if I did not do this for myself. And this is also why I'm here for these trans kids. They get, you know, kids get caught up in drama, and they do clicks. We did that in high school, right? We're clicking. We're going to these different spaces. This is what's happening on the internet, which is dangerous, because they're losing their own thought. They're losing their own free thinking, because they're having to be pushed into how to speak correctly, how to ask pronouns. It's a very rigid space to be in. And that's not going to make you a good person. That's going to make you a follower. And I've never been a follower. I've always been a leader on some level. And so I see the detriment that this can do to the future of this community and the future of these kids. They're not going to have the power to do things that I did. And I really think that was because I didn't have what these kids have today. I had to transition all by myself, all on my own, and just focus on creating my own space. And they don't have that anymore.
So how do you think we go from that space of that unforgiving, unrelenting oppressiveness to like a more learning environment where things are open and available?
Beautiful. Well, that's what I'm working on, to be honest with you. And that's why I get pushback from some of the community, though I've made a huge breakthrough now. And I think kids are starting to hear what I'm having to say is I don't disagree with you kids. I just have a different story and I have a different way of doing it. So I'm a big believer of education. And it's why I moved myself out of the trans community into the mainstream world of cisgender, whatever you want to call it, of the world. And I speak all over the world to base not my community, because creating education is how we build a bridge. And I see the younger generation as very angry and disconnected from building bridges. So I'm like the guy who builds bridges. I build bridges with racists. I build bridges with people who hate, are homophobic, transphobic, all the things that are against what I believe. Because how do you change the world? You have to connect to the people who hate you. If you don't connect to them, you will never change the world. So trans kids are not seeing that. And I think on some level, I put myself out there to get hit every day so that at least one kid can say, hey, I see what Buck is trying to do, and gets himself out of this whole infighting that's going to turn into nothing. It's going to actually ruin us.
What about education for parents of trans kids? Because, you know, awesome. That is, am I losing my camera here? Sorry. I've heard so many heartbreaking stories of kids who self-harm and kill themselves because they don't get that support at home. So how do you reach these parents who just are so closed-minded and not open to just loving their children?
Oh, gosh. So, you know, I was suicidal. I was put in a, what we used to call a mental psychiatric ward. I was considered crazy. When I said I was a boy, everyone lost their shit back in, I was born in 1962. So back in the day, you didn't say these things. They just equated me to being a gay woman, but that was not what was happening. So that said, I tried to commit suicide. I was a cutter. I have cuts all over my, I was an alcoholic, a drug addict, a homeless, prostitution. I could go on and on and on, but here I stand. Why? Because the willpower I have. So what happened was my parents are amazing. My dad's Canadian, by the way. Amazing. Yeah. Winnipeg. My dad's from Winnipeg.
Oh, I wouldn't brag about that.
I know. I'm going to tell him you said that. He was on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. My dad was a
okay,
then.
Okay, come here. Okay, all right.
So anyway, that said, like, you know, the thing is that parents are hurting. There's no information. Oh my God. My parents, I don't know how they did it, but they just believed in me and they always knew I was a little boy. But then I turned 16 and I got boobs and I got my period and I became a girl, and my parents were so lost. I was lost. That's when suicide started. That's when, you know, drinking, everything went downhill from there. So I see the hurt and the pain that these parents are going through because they try to Google shit or they try to look for stuff. There's no information out there. This is the part that I try to tell our community. Parents need information in order to help you kids go forward. And if they don't have the information, they're not going to be okay with it. And that's a good parent. That says to me that's a good parent because they're not seeing what they need to see. I don't know how my parents got through the situation they did, only because of the love in their heart for me. And my dad just wrote me a letter the other day and he said, you know, it's going to make me cry actually, because he said to me, you know, your mother was smart and she always accepted you. I did not. And he didn't. And he said, until you tried to commit suicide. And then I realized I would rather have a son alive than a dead. I would rather have a live son than a dead son. And I was like, holy shit. He actually finally like admitted my transition. He admitted that he needed to accept me as a man. So now I see the deep hurt my parents went through, and I really make an effort to talk to parents and say, I understand you. If no one's saying to parents, I understand your pain and your anguish, and am I making the right choice? I just give them a little bit of, like, you know, bumper room to say everything you're feeling is totally okay. Because of course it's a scary space to go in when your child says, I want to transition, and there's no information. So parents out there know this. What you're doing is love when you start to look for information. And of course, you don't want your child to go through something that they're not going to be able to understand what they're doing. So every parent out there who is struggling with this, I care about you and I know what you're doing is the right thing, but we need to create more education for you.
I remember when my son had come out as trans, and it was the least shocking thing I had ever heard, because we knew, he was 12, but we knew when he was four, but he needed to know it. He needed to say it. So we waited. Yeah. And even when he said it, once you put it out there, you can't put it back in. And I remember being fucking terrified because I didn't know what to do. We're lucky we have a gender diversity clinic at our hospital here, at our children's hospital. And he immediately got in and he worked through it with his doctors. That was brilliant. But if I knew then that everything would be okay, it would be easier. We're on the other side of it now. And I have a happy kid. He was like you, Buck. He was bordering on suicidal. He was explosive. Angry. He was an awful kid. I didn't like coming home every day to his moods and it was scary. And, but I just wish I knew that someone would have told me like you, like, it's going to be okay. Give it a couple years. You know what the worst part was about it? The goddamn paperwork. I'll tell you that. That was awful.
Well, thank God that you're saying that, because that means to me that shit's changing. Because if the paperwork is the hardest part for you, and not losing your daughter to become your son, that's a thing for parents. They're losing their daughter. I honestly had to connect to that with my dad and had to realize that he lost his daughter. And that is not a joke. That is, even though I don't feel that way, he does. And when you discount your parents' feelings and you discount where your parents are coming from, you are not helping your parents understand who you are. I am their daughter for a lack of anything else. I am still my parents' daughter on some level. And then until they let go of that and started to realize I'm actually their son, that's when the transition happened for me and them. And now I'm just their son and it's never a big deal. But after this, before anything else, I have to say thank you. You're an amazing parent. And we need more people like you who care about their children and do the research and understand. Now he's probably the happiest kid in the world, right?
Oh, he's still a teenage asshole. Don't get
I don't get excited. Sure, but he's a lovely teenage asshole.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Right on.
Do you know what thank you. That really means a lot, Buck. That means a lot that you said that. The best was that I have another son who's a couple of years younger, and he said it multiple times. He said, I really didn't like my sister. My sister was an asshole, but my brother's okay.
See that?
His sister was a dick. But his brother's all right. You know, they can work it out. That beautiful. So there, here we are anyway.
Yep.
All right. You have such a huge story, but beyond the education and working with people going through transitions and telling stories, there's a naughty side to Buck Angel.
I know that from the kids.
my son yesterday said, ask him about the buck off.
And then
we had a very uncomfortable exchange. Well, let me see.
I'm describing it to Sandra today because I may have watched a couple of promotional videos, so I wanted to be prepared.
Thank you.
Do you know that? Yeah.
Maybe I accidentally clicked a link that took me to Pornhub on my work computer, but whatever.
Whoops. Sorry.
My son and I did have an uncut, like I said, oh, what's the buck off, Olson? And he said, Mom, I don't want to have this conversation with you. You're going to need to use the internet. And I'm like, tell me. He said, nope. He got up and he left. So he said, you handle the buck off with Buck. I'm not going there.
That's awesome.
We talk about everything, but he won't talk about the buck off.
Right on.
But
at least you know how to get some privacy, Sandra.
That's right. Go get your buck off.
That's every awesome. Time you want to be alone.
That's right. We're going to talk about the buck off now.
So you've developed, do I call them sex toys? What do I call them?
Well, they are sex toys, but I'll be honest with you. I try to get out of that space because people have a really weird, rigid, no, but you can do that, a rigid thought process when it comes to a sex toy, right? Where I call these actual genital wellness toys. So what they do is they're sexual wellness, right? So they help with genital dysphoria. So they basically more for me are a medical device on some level or a wellness device, but they're totally a sex toy. They're basically a masturbator. It's a masturbator for transgender men. And what happens is our clitorises grow bigger because of the testosterone. And if you know basic biology, when you're in the tummy, you can either go male or female, right? So sometimes you don't even know. The clitoris can become a penis. penis or a clit. So that said, when we take testosterone, the clitoris actually starts to look like a small penis. It's insane. It's amazing. And then we actually can get little erections. And this fits over top of the clitoris and it pumps. I want to show you why this is such an important toy. It's the first in the world of its kind. I created the first transgender male sex toy and line now. So actually what it does, it alleviates that dysphoria of touching your vagina, because we don't want to have vaginas. We want to have penises, but some of us can't get a penis. And so this thing, see how it has a little penis head right here? So basically it looks like that. And then it has a hole underneath, and in the hole, it has these ridges. And then when you put it over top of your clitoris and it sucks you inside of it. And now look, when I do this, what does it look like? I'm jacking off like a man. So now you're literally masturbating like a man. And that is everything, because now you connect your mind to your genitals as masculine. And these sold all over the world. They went insane. It went insane, like, because people need these kind of, just this little thing, this little toy, this little has literally changed guys' lives. And they're like, I'm not sure if I even want to get bottom surgery anymore. And not that I'm anti-bottom surgery. I'm anti-going and getting surgery before you try things out to make sure you don't like it. Because do you test drive a car before you buy it? Of course you do. You try all kinds of cars, but if you're just going to get rid of your vagina and you don't even know that it's actually something you might like, you're actually making a mistake.
I also saw the pack and play, which...
Yep, that too.
I saw you model it, and it was fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, that has actually been my dream. So I created a packer for men, so it basically looks like a penis in your pants, right? But when I'm really about sex. Sex changed my life. Once I connected to my body sexually as a man with a vagina, it changed everything. But imagine walking the world as a man with a vagina. I started my work 20 plus years ago, and it was not easy. People hated me. People wanted to kill me. They'd call me the Antichrist. It was insane. With people just because I'm a man with a vagina. But what I realized was there's so many men out there who are disconnected sexually because they don't understand their bodies. But we also need to feel masculine in our bodies. So I created what's called the Fun Boy, which is a pack and play. And it's basically a limp penis, right? So you can wear it around, you look like you have a penis. But I created a rod. So once you want to have intercourse or, you know, penetrative sex, you just stick the rod. You don't have to take it off or anything. You just stick the rod inside of it and you instantly have an erection. And now you can, where before we had to take our pants off, go get our dildos, blah, blah, blah. Like you're waiting in the other room. The whole sex mood is like out. You're like, I'll be back once I have a heart on. It's like so crazy. So this thing blew up too. It became one of my biggest selling sex toys.
Can we go back to how you became a porn actor? How did that, you know, once you transitioned, you were, how old were you, by the way?
When I transitioned, I think it was my late 20s. So I started my porn work in my early 30s. Yeah.
And how does one become a porn actor?
So long story short.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. Underneath a side hustle, by the way.
That's right. The radio thing doesn't work out.
You know what? Porn is not an easy job at all. People think they're just going to get in porn and make shit tons of money. No. It doesn't work that way. There's too many people in porn now, and anyone can make porn. And it's become, when I did it, you could make money because it was still DVD. So what I saw was a lack of representation. There was not one single trans man porn star, porn, nothing, no porn, nothing 20 years ago. But there was transgender women porn, where they used to call them chicks with dicks or ladyboys or she-males. That was a huge genre in porn. So I started creating movies with my ex-wife now. She was a dominatrix. So we started making these movies for the internet. And then I met a trans woman and she was like, can you work on my website? I'm like, sure. And then it literally clicked in my brain. I was like, she would call herself a chick with a dick. And I was like, I'm the man with the pussy. And I was like, Buck Angel, the man with the pussy. And it literally was like a light bulb. And I was like, should I do this? And my friend goes like this. I'll never forget. He said to me, dude, you will change the world if you do that. And I was like, I'm just going to make porn. How am I going to change the world? And here I sit today, like literally traveling the world, talking about my vagina. Like it literally catapulted me into this other space I never would imagine, because it's porn. I literally made hardcore porn, and I did it because I didn't see it. And I wanted to create visibility. And I also wanted to make $1 million.
All really, really great ideas.
That's it.
That totally makes sense, because anybody who is into like straight porn or even gay porn, you can find it online. And like, how are you going to experiment, or that the internet is where we look.
That's right. So imagine if you don't ever see yourself. Imagine, ladies, you are somewhere and you just get an inkling that you want to watch something hot. You want to like masturbate or whatever. Just look at, and you can pretty much find everything in your dreams, or even yourself represented. I never, ever saw myself represented, ever. It never was there until I did it. And then when I did it, people were like, oh my God, thank you for doing this. It's amazing. Like, people really came out of the woodwork to thank me for it, even though there was a ton of death threats. I got death threats. I got my community actually partly hated me for doing it, because they said, everyone's going to think all of us have vaginas. And I'm like, what part of man with a pussy? I never represented anybody. It was all about me. It wasn't about anybody else. So, you know, I got into a little bit, people still dislike me in the community because I'm very, sex positive and I talk about sex.
What about fetishizing? Because I have a friend, and she is male to female, and she has told me about her dating life being absolutely atrocious because she's been fetishized constantly and nobody wants to be with her. It's actually, it breaks my heart when she tells me these things. So tell me, so what about that?
Yeah, what about that? This is very controversial in our community because I disagree with that. So that being said, she has a different experience than me because she's a male to female. Male to females have totally different experience from female to male. That said, people will say, you're fetishizing trans men by making porn. Well, first off, I don't think fetishizing is a bad thing. I don't. I think fetishizing just says, I'm attracted to feet. I'm attracted to cigar smoking. I'm attracted to big boobs. How is that a bad thing? I'm attracted to a man with a vagina. That is not a bad thing. That is actually opening up people's sexuality. It's opening up to what people, you're giving people a sense of not feeling as if what they're thinking is bad, because before they would look at it like bad. Oh, I'm attracted to a trans woman. Does that make me blah, blah, blah? But now we're just saying, yeah, you're attracted to a man with a vagina, or you're attracted to a woman with a penis. So here's what I would say to her. She needs to get out of that thought process that the community has given her, that anytime anyone is attracted to her or just wants to have sex with her, they're fetishizing her. She will never get a date. She will never find anybody. She will always put herself in this actual black and white way of thinking. There is nothing wrong with someone saying, I'm actually attracted to a woman with a penis. Do you think that that's wrong?
No. I think,
of course not.
I think great sex is great sex, and we need more of it in the world.
My point being, why is she saying she's fetishized? What does she want to hear from these people? That's the problem for me. Fetishizing is too big. You understand what I mean? There's such a wide thing you can say about fetishizing. But if you put yourself in that position to be fetishized, then you're fetishized. But if you actually change your thought process and say, actually, this person is attracted to me and wants to have sex with me, they don't want to have a relationship. They don't want to spend their time with me.
That's the barrier. It's that they want to fuck me, but they don't want a relationship with me.
Well, tough shit. You know what? There's a lot of people out there who just want to fuck you, want to fuck me, want to fuck, and don't want to have a relationship. There's nothing wrong with that. I have a wife now and a child, but it took me a long time to find these things because people just wanted to fuck me. So I was like, okay, I had to realize that that is the situation. And then once I understood that, I was like, oh, but there's nothing wrong with that. I just need to separate myself from emotional to just sexual.
What about young dudes that like to have get it on with old MILFs like me? Is that a fetish?
Because she's in. No.
Actually, my friend, that's a big fetish. That's a big genre in porn. You'll do well.
Well, I feel like I'm very well represented in the porn world.
And that's right. And is it a fetish? Yeah, of course it is. But does it make it bad? I don't think so at all.
I don't think so. Does it make me feel good? Yeah, actually. That there's a whole group of young hot dudes that kind of want to know what it's like to get with grandma over here.
And there's nothing wrong with that because you accept it. Do you see the difference right there?
Yeah,
just accepted it. You said, it's cool. I'm a MILF. These young guys want to fuck me. That's awesome. That's all they want to do. That's what the situation for me is with the trans community. They're not looking at it as a bigger picture. They're only victimizing themselves and saying, people only want to have sex with us because we're trans. Well, of course that's the reason why they want to, or they go over and just have sex with a cisgender person. So there's no logic sometimes to this thought process, because if you want the world to accept you, sometimes you're just going to, I mean, if you know all the things I've done, I've been on Howard Stern sitting on a Sibian machine, getting totally humiliated in order to change the world. So you're worried about somebody fetishizing you? Like, come on, man, move on.
I'd like to hear more about that machine, but okay.
Just Google Howard Stern and Buck Angel.
Oh my God.
Work computer. I will guess it.
But I want to introduce you to my son Olson, who got out of bed.
Oh, you're so handsome. Hi.
I call him a trans boy, but he's gonna be 19. He's a man. I just can't accept the fact that I'm a man.
You have a man now. Is a man. Nice to meet you, my friend.
Meet you too.
I'm going to get you a buck off for Christmas.
Oh. It's coming, dude.
Stocking stuffer.
This is going to be in your stocking, dude. I'm explaining it all to your mom right now. Don't worry.
He did a visual demonstration. I think that's awesome.
That's so good. Right on. You know, but I want to tell you, dude, you have an awesome mom. You are so blessed, my friend, and she is amazing. And honestly, really, you know it. I don't need to tell you. You're in an awesome space. So I really want to tell you that, because I talk to a lot of parents, and I talk to a lot of kids struggling and a lot of parents struggling. But to see this right here in front of my eyes is everything for me. So I just want to tell you that, kiddo. You are in an awesome space.
Thank you.
Sandra, please.
Yay, that's so beautiful. That is fucking beautiful.
She does this when she wants me to leave.
thank you, Buck. That means beautiful. So much.
Yeah, it means everything to me in my work to see parents connect to their children, because that's the ultimate for me. The kids are the future. If I don't leave, I want to leave everything I built to these kids. And if they're not fucking focused, I'm not going to be leaving anything for them. And I built a lot. So I want these kids to be strong and able to take it on. And you're building a kid and a son who will be able to take the future of this community to a better level.
You know, I often say if I could do things again, I wish I would have handled myself differently at the start of his transition, because I didn't know what to do. It was my husband who said, get him on the hormone blockers now. What are you waiting for? Yeah. And I didn't know. I was afraid to do anything medically because I was afraid to, you know, cause more harm. But it was my husband. I credit him with actually saying, what the fuck? Wow. Like, is there any question in your mind that he's a boy? I'm like, none. And he's like, then?
Wow. I have to tell you though, it's usually the other way around. The parents I speak to, it's usually the dad who's, and the mom is like, yeah. And so that's really shocking. But at the same time, I got to tell you, thank you for being and taking the time to understand before jumping into it. Hormone blockers are not a joke, and they're not for everybody. And I think that they give them out like candy. And I think that's actually detrimental to the forwardness of this community. We can't just be slinging that stuff. It's not for everyone.
I remember a few months before Olson had come out to me, I had read a story about a mother in somewhere in Canada, and she had an 8-year-old daughter who had come out and female to male. I apologize. It was male to female. And the mom had put the child on hormone blockers, and it made national news. And I read the story. Obviously, I was a little interested in learning more. And I got very judgy because I obviously wasn't educated. And I thought, what the fuck? 8 years old? Oh my God, that's scary. And then I remember I have a girlfriend, and she is, and I have to give her all the credit. Her name is Amanda Jeté Knox, and she wrote the book Love Lives Here. Yeah. She lives in Ottawa here, and she's a friend of mine. I met her at the Trans Parent Support Group.
Oh, wow.
Small world. She said to me when I told her that story after both of our children transitioned together, she said, Sandra, when did you know that you were a girl? I said, I've always known. And she said, there's your answer.
Right on.
I get it now.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. So, brilliant.
Anyway,
yeah. No, just that little click. That sometimes that's all you need is that puzzle. Stick it in. It's like you heard, and that's it. It's that simple. We always felt this way. It's not. That's why there's a difference between somebody like myself and a newer generation of kids and people who are just saying they're trans ID. You see the difference? Trans ID. I do not ID as a trans person. I ID as a man. I don't want to be looked at as a transgender person or a transsexual. I want to be looked at as a man. So there's a difference in the youth today as IDing. It's an identity choice as transgender. It was never a choice for me. It was a medical condition that I needed to fix. There's a big difference there.
That must be so confusing to find out where you land for somebody who's not sure, like to figure out where you fit in that spectrum.
Yes, and that's another problem because I think it's confusing kids on such a level. I'm now doing a huge, study on detransitioning because I see a large amount of youth detransitioning, and that is very scary to me. It's just the beginning. There's like so many kids going, "I made a mistake," and now, really, how did you make that mistake? I've never thought about that. This has been a mistake. I probably would say guess the same with your son. You probably never ever thought it was a mistake. So why are some kids going, it's a mistake, and then they're totally freaked out? That, and it's a very fast thing. There are hundreds upon hundreds of kids detransitioning right now.
What's the process like though in the States? Like I know, Sandra, when you were going through the process with Olson, it was a longer process to go through therapy and to talk to him and to figure out where he was and the steps that you guys were going to take as a family.
Yeah, it took a long time to get him on testosterone. I mean, they did not take the decision lightly because he was one of the youngest children at the hospital. I mean, he had one session with the gender identity doctor who was like, yeah, there's no question here.
Right on.
This is a boy who knows who he is, 100%. Right. And then we immediately got on the blockers, which was not an issue, but it was the testosterone that it took. Well, Olson will say, I don't want to speak for him, but he will say that it took him forever.
But what is forever? What is?
Hold on, Olson, come here.
Yeah, I want to know. Yeah, I do. I'm very interested.
Olson would like to know what forever is for the testosterone.
Because yeah, what? How long did it take you?
Transitioning.
Right.
Get on camera, child.
How old was I? I was maybe in the seventh grade when I started, what's it called? Lupron, right?
Yeah, your hormone blockers.
Yeah, I started Lupron like in the seventh grade, so I was like 12. Uh-huh. And then testosterone took me into, I think I started grade 9, so I would have been 14. Right. So probably a good 2 years, just because of how young I was, because...
Right.
At that point,
he has a tattoo on the back of his that actually signifies the day that he first went on.
That's so beautiful.
Part about this is it was the day I started testosterone, exactly on the same day 2 years later, I had top surgery.
Wow. So I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But see, you're that case. I talk about that as different than a lot of the newer generation. I mean, you literally are like me, and I didn't get to take hormone blockers. So I didn't get to transition until way later. And I had already got all the female characteristics and all that. So I'm a big believer in the hormone blockers, but I'm also a big believer in doing steps like you did. You did it. So I have a kid that I work with here in LA, same thing. His parents are doing the exact same thing. And I can see you're just a little boy, but you see the difference between doing that and the structure you had to go through. And here in LA specifically, you don't have to go through that structure. A parent can go to the place, get the hormone blockers, give their child hormones at 13 or whatever without any doctor approval. That is not okay with me. I'm not okay. No, did you have any psychological evaluations?
Really?
Yes, really.
It's true.
I mean,
I've seen some about that as well. Yeah.
Well, we're talking about detransitioning, and oh, sorry, Buck. He didn't hear you.
No, it's okay. Yeah,
he's saying that hundreds of kids are now detransitioning because it's so easy. And what is detransitioning like medically once you've been on hormones and testosterone? What does that look like?
It's basically transitioning. I don't think is an easy thing itself, but you have to do that like twice.
Yeah. So look at your son right now. Imagine if he just said to you, "Oh my God, I made a mistake. I actually am really a woman." Everything you see on that kid right there is there forever. So he's going to have all those male characteristics. He's never going to look female ever again. You had top surgery. Did you already have top surgery?
Yeah.
Never going to have boobs again. Did you have a hysterectomy?
Yeah, I did.
There you go.
I tried to get a mommy and me hysterectomy, but they.
I'm glad you did that, by the way, because I was 20. I was about 18 years on testosterone when I got really sick. And bottom line, I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but I ended up getting really sick and almost dying of atrophy. I got vaginal atrophy. And I'm the very first case, a recorded case of a female on long-term testosterone and what it does to your reproductive system. No doctors told me to get a hysterectomy. I literally almost died. If I didn't go to the hospital 5 more minutes, they said I would have died of septic. I got septic because I had an infection and nobody knew. Nobody would touch me. No gynecologist would look at me. Every time I would go to the gynecologist, they were like, ah. So my point being is you actually saved yourself from being really sick, from getting atrophy and all the things that we don't even talk about in our community. Yet here they are giving youngsters testosterone without understanding the long-term effects of testosterone.
Right.
And their parents would have to sign off on any of these medical things.
That's
so,
right.
So they come at it probably from a place of love, thinking I'm here to support my child and do the best that I can. So you're saying that there just needs to be more people in this medical field to
structure. You had structure. You actually had structure. You had to go see a doctor. Then the doctor like said, okay, we're going to start you on hormone blockers. And they literally like, it was a whole structure. Here, you don't have that structure. You know, it's like if the child says they're trans, you cannot question that at all. That means the parent can't even question it. I have issues with that. At 8 years old, yeah, you knew you were a boy, 100% you did, no doubt about it. But at the same time, you had structure. Imagine if you didn't have that structure. And imagine if you said, oh, I don't think you are a trans boy and you're not going to do this, but you can't do that here. You don't have any say-so in the matter. He has all the say-so. So you would, as a parent, you wouldn't even be able to block it.
But in your situation, Sandra, you guys, you and Olson, you did a lot of therapy as well, right? Like there was a lot of talk therapy and psychotherapy.
That's what I'm talking about.
There was a team of people and one couldn't move forward without the others agreeing on it.
Yeah. My God, and you are all the better for it, kiddo. You will see. I can already tell. I see his energy. I see everything. He's so different than a lot of the younger generation that are like, because they didn't have structure.
Right. You have to have like mental health sometimes, care. But not about
sales. You're still a teenage asshole. That's
that's awesome, man. Right on. You're so cute.
Where do we go from here? We've covered sex toys. We've covered porn star.
You know what? Maybe I do want to talk a little bit more. You said that some of the pushback you've gotten is because that you're so sex positive and you have worked in porn and do work in porn. Do you think that that's held you back in any way?
Oh, God, that's a great question. So above and beyond me being transsexual, being a porn star is worse than anything you could ever be in the world. See, I'm not even fucking with you. It is like worse than being a serial killer. I'm not kidding. Serial killers get like their own documentaries and like shit. When you're a porn star, you're basically the Antichrist. So that said, it has been so difficult for me to get out of porn. And I tried to do that. Like I said, I'm actually a public speaker as well. I travel the world speaking, but I'm still considered a porn star. So I just realized, you know what? Why am I trying to push that away? I had to actually embrace my sex work and realize that if people are coming at me like that, it must mean it's that important. So instead of me trying to push it away, I decided I'm going to embrace what I did and I'm going to make it into a sexual wellness space, because that way people hear it more as a wellness and not pornography, because pornography just has a connotation that's bad. So I changed my space into sexual wellness toys. So, you know, I create lubes for trans men. I create a body wash, because here's the deal. People don't know these things. Our body changes with the hormonal structure. The smell of our vaginas become weird and different. And these kids are freaking out. They're like, And so I had to create actual products that help these kids learn about their own bodies, because nobody else is talking about your vaginal smell will change because of the hormonal space.
Would anybody else even know if they haven't been through it?
That's right. That's 100% right. So that said, being a porn star was the worst thing ever for my career. But then I realized, well, I can use it in a way that creates a more educational and sexual wellness and products and all those things within the sexual space. And once I did that, I was looked at in a different way. And now people sort of look at me in a more respectful way as opposed to a horrible porn star.
Because you transitioned so long ago, how difficult was it to get your paperwork? I talk about the nightmare that I went through doing the paperwork, but back then they weren't probably going from F to M very easily on documentation because anytime we travel into another country, I lose my shit. Because I get really, really scared as to, now he's fine. He's got the M designation.
Great.
But before then, it was so scary to travel. What's it like for you?
So every piece of my documentation is mail. Because if I went through the airport, or if I was landing in Malaysia looking like this, and my passport says female, they're actually going to shoot me. But that said, I've been lucky enough to get all my stuff changed. Early on, we didn't have the same in America, in the United States. We didn't have the same sort of more heavier space that we have now. It was so free. I just went to the Department of Motor Vehicles, changed my name, and said, I also want to get the M on there. Is that okay? And the lady looked at me. I was like a young kind of masculine woman at the time, and I hadn't started taking hormones. And she said, okay, if that's what you want to do. And I was like, what? And she literally changed it for me. That was 30 years ago. So moving forward, I was the actual first person here in Los Angeles, in California, who actually got my birth certificate changed to male and not amended, but actually they tore up the old one and gave me a new one that literally says I was born male. And they don't do that anymore. After 9/11, they just amend them. But I actually have a birth certificate. My birth certificate states that I was born male.
What did it mean to you to have that?
So pardon me?
What did it mean for you to have that? Like, what did it feel like when you got that birth certificate in your hand?
I cried. You see me, I'm a big crybaby. I cried. I was like, holy shit. And then I showed my parents. I don't think they were prepared for that. They were like, well, but you were born a girl. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand. This is a big deal because now it opens the door for other trans people to be able to change their document. All I did was remove my breasts. I still have a vagina. So on some level, I'm still female. Think about this. I'm still female because the world is focused on genitals. And if you have a vagina, you're a woman. If you have a penis, you're a man. I've been fighting that forever. And so on some level, my birth certificate really states that I'm actually a man with a vagina. And if you think about it in that respect, it actually opens the door for so many other people to be able to say, well, that's not true. I actually am a man with a vagina, and they can use me as an example.
Why do people give a fuck so much what's between your legs? Like, because I've always wondered, what the fuck do they care?
Well,
you don't need to know what's between mine, you know what I mean?
But
the gay community, and people are so concerned with what's happening in each other's bedrooms. Why do you think people give a shit so much? What are they afraid of?
It's layers, and that's it right there, fear. Fear is everything. And you know why fear? Fear, think about fear across the board. What we're dealing today in the United States, are you guys having protests in Canada? I don't know, but for, you know, George Floyd, that's fear. People are fearful of black people. It's a real thing. White people are fearful of black people. Why are they fearful of black people? Because they don't know. They don't take the time to educate themselves. They don't understand the different culture from white to black. And once you start to understand things, fear goes away. So we need education above and beyond anything in the world. I don't care what subject matter you're talking about. If you educate people and they're willing to listen to you, most of the time they're willing to sort of meet you in the middle or even change their mind. So really everything for me is about educate. I use my body to educate. I use everything I do to educate the world on not everything you think. What you don't know, that I'm actually used to be a woman. Nobody would ever even believe it. But it gives me the opportunity to say, look, you would never believe I used to be a woman, but here I stand, my friend. So how do we have that conversation? Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely. I have a question for other parents who are listening to this podcast right now, who is a child who is transitioning, or they're not sure, or there's questions or whatever. What do you tell them about how to proceed, especially if somebody's listening in the United States right now and doesn't have that structure?
Great. Thank you for saying that. It means a lot to me. So I'm big on mental health care. I believe first and foremost, before you do anything, and that's with anything, but trans kids, you got to take them to a therapist. I don't care about anything else. I don't care if they're, I'm trans. There is too much on the internet today. And I'm going to tell you that there are some of these children who are influenced. That's not a popular opinion, but it's the reality of what Trampa sees. And I'm standing back watching, and I'm saying there's too many kids out there who are just like, I'm trans, as if it's like this cool thing to do. And I keep saying it is not easy to be trans, and I do not wish it upon anybody. I would wish that your son was just born your son, even though it's okay to be trans today, all of that. But I guarantee you, it would have been better for him to be born a boy. It would have been better for me to be born a boy. Yeah, we are special people now, but it is not this thing that you just become. It's literally in your heart. But I do think that there are kids being sort of indoctrinated, for lack of a better word, that because it's a thing now. So what I would say to parents is, if your kid is coming home to you and saying, I'm trans, and sometimes this is happening out of nowhere, kids are just like total little girls one minute, and then all of a sudden they're like, I'm trans the next minute. It's a thing that I'm a little bit watching, and I'm saying, take your child to a therapist.
Now, Buck, before we started recording this, you promised that you were going to give Sandra and I an education.
On,
you had said, having been born a female and now living as a male, you know how to solve all of our problems in life with our significant others.
So that's awesome. Thank you for giving me the space to talk about this. So everybody, in case you don't know, I was born female. I lived half my life, sort of half or whatever, as a female. Then I moved over to becoming a man. I've always been a sexual being, even as a woman. But that said, remember, I used to be a woman. Now I'm a man. I interact in the world as male, but my eyes and my brain were still socialized as a female. That said, we need to understand the difference between the way men think and the way women think. And it's a real thing, because I'm telling you, I think differently now. The way I interact with people, the way I deal with stuff is a whole different level. That's hormonal. So women have estrogen, men have testosterone. I have now testosterone where I used to have just estrogen. Emotions play into sex. Whether anyone wants to agree with that or not, I'm telling you, this is my experience of what I see. Women tend to be much more emotionally connected to sex in a way that men are not. Now, I'm not saying that, I'm making a very black and white statement. Sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're just horny and you want to have nasty sex. And that's awesome. And you're not necessarily emotionally connected to it. But most of the time, women are emotionally connected to sex. And for example, sometimes you just don't feel like having sex. Maybe you're tired. Maybe you took care of the kids all day. Where men work all day and they can still come home and be horny. That's because hormonally, testosterone amps up your libido. It's a real thing, where estrogen can literally do these things and is not necessarily a sexual space to be in. Now, what I know is this: men and women, cisgender, whatever you want to call them, necessarily have different sex drives or sexual needs. And if we understand the needs of men are not necessarily emotional, but are much more in a space of hormonal or just physical. Men need to spread their seed. It's a real thing. Like, that's actually, I think, a biological thing. Men need to spread their seed. It's why they probably masturbate more than women, watch a lot more porn, are constantly in this state of sexual need, where women don't need that need on some level, because I don't think that they need to spread their seed as much as men do. So if you understand these levels here, I talk to women all the time about this. If your man needs sex and you're just not willing to be in that space, are you willing to let them look at porn? Are you willing to let them talk? Are you willing even to bring somebody into your relationship and alleviate that need that you have to give over? Are you understanding what I'm saying to you?
Absolutely. Of course. I've always said, I don't understand how men can take the emotion out of it though. It's like I don't understand men, but now I kind of do. I don't understand the way they can think.
Right, exactly. And I can, because now I'm not so emotionally connected to sex that way. I'm much more physically connected, and I can have sexual partners. Whereas before, I could not do that. I was too emotionally connected to sex, which meant I was jealous, or if anyone had sex with my girlfriend or did that, there's no way I could handle it. Where now, on some level, I'm like, yeah, that's hot. I want to watch my girlfriend get laid. That's a totally awesome thing for me. I could never have done that as a woman. And I really equate that to my hormonal space of testosterone that has amped up my libido. Like, I'm 58 and I literally am like a 20-year-old guy. And that, this is the other thing people need to understand. Older men lose testosterone. It is why older men start to get bellies, start to feel a little bit more lethargic and not so sexual space, because they are going through menopause too. We don't talk about male menopause. It's a real thing. Yeah. So you're actually, your testosterone starts to lower at around the age of 30. And if you just injected or put hormonal, I have so many men now who love me because I gave them back their sex life. I said, dude, go to your doctor and talk about HRT, hormone replacement therapy. And the doctor will be excited to give it to you, because it will not only help you sexually, it will help the way you think. It'll help the way your body looks. It'll start to give you more muscle mass. It's an actual real thing. And your libido will amp up. I've even told women, take a little bit of testosterone. Your whole libido will change. It'll totally change. Testosterone is libido.
It's so interesting that you say that men think about it more from a physical level, where women are more emotional, because even when the woman's sex drive is higher than the male, when a woman gets turned down or her partner doesn't want to have sex, that's like a personal affront.
That's right.
It's like, you must not love me because you don't want to fuck me.
See that? That's emotional. Whereas
But what about after 20? What about after 20 years when nobody wants to? What's that?
Oh, don't leave me hanging, Buck.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Not necessarily the newer marriages, but the older marriages where sex starts to go out.
So he needs a little more estrogen. I need some testosterone, and maybe we can meet. Well,
no. No, give him more testosterone. Is he always trying to have sex with you? And you're like, lay off, dude.
No, it's the other way.
Right on. But seriously, to all the women out there who are listening, and maybe you're having this situation in your life, you should, and you have been married for a long time, you should also talk to your husband about HRT. If you feel like he's not having the same, you know, enthusiasm around sex and all of those things, we have to remember, as hormones go down as we get older. That's what menopause is. I don't have that because every week I have to inject testosterone into my body for the rest of my life. And so my hormonal level is like a 20-year-old. I'm constantly at this space where your hormonal levels are doing this because you're not injecting hormones. It's naturally produced.
It almost feels like you're showing off right now.
I am. Yeah. I am. I am.
I am strong like bull.
I am strong. That's totally awesome.
Oh my God. Buck Angel, is it too soon to say that I love you? I don't know if are we there yet in our relationship?
We're there.
We there? Okay. We're there. I can't even tell you how much this meant to me as a trans mom that right Olson on. Got to meet you. It really means a lot. And I love what you had to say. And it's given anybody who's listening right now in education, but trans parents, allies, it's just given us more to think about. And I think we need to start thinking a little bit more.
Thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate you guys bringing me on and giving me voice, but I also want to just do the disclaimer. Everything I said is only what I think, and it's only my opinion. Now, I am not the expert on anything other than myself and my own transition and where I come from and what I do in life. I'm just giving this information because I think some people might connect to it. Some people might get angry what I say, but I guarantee you'll think about everything I said. So again, giving me space to say these things is very important to me because I go against a lot of the newer thought process. And I do that because I want people to think about everything. And nothing is black and white. Nothing. Zero. Nothing. Everything has edges to it that you've got to think about everything before you make a final choice.
Well, Buck, as an ally and a big lover of Olsen and Sandra, I am crazy about them. And now you, I just want to thank you for spending some time with us today. It was awesome.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. It really means a lot to me. I appreciate you guys. So thank you.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.